This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharyson, the editor-in-chief over at NumberFire.com, and this is episode 55 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the NumberFire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. The way I see fantasy football start-sit choices is that if you're logical, you're right. No matter the outcome, you're right as long as you were logical in getting to that choice. Process over results. Looking at the results is important, though. Each week, I go back and I look at recommendations that I gave you guys the previous week to see what I missed, see what I got right, and if there were any spots where my process seemed broken. And in turn, the hope is that the process gets better than each week. It's sort of like golf. Are there any avid golfers that are listening to this podcast right now? Avid isn't exactly the word that I'd use to describe my relationship with golf, but I've played golf for years and I enjoy playing golf. I'm a low 90s golfer, and if I shoot in the 80s one day, I shouldn't assume that I'll always shoot in the 80s if I did nothing different on that day with my swing or with my approach. Sometimes you get lucky. Sometimes your ball hits a tree and squirts out onto the fairway over and over and over again. And sometimes I'll shoot in the high 90s. That doesn't mean I need to change absolutely everything about my game. It just means I probably got some bad bounces here or there, or I drank too many beers. That happens. Having that perspective is always important when analyzing your start-sit choices. And as you know, this is another start-sit show. But before we get into the starts or sits, I want to talk to you guys about FanDuel's Friends Mode. With Friends Mode, you can play FanDuel with your buddies in a private league with cash prizes. And since you pick a new team every week, there are no season-ending injuries, draft busts, unfair trades, bye weeks, or waiver wires. Trust me, once you try Friends Mode, you won't want to go back. So start your league anytime during the season at FanDuel.com/friends. That's FanDuel.com/friends. And if you start a new Friends Mode Championship League by October 15th, FanDuel will double your first week's payout. So what are you waiting for? Go try Friends Mode. And if you're new to FanDuel, use promo code NUMBERFIRE when you sign up. That's promo code NUMBERFIRE. All right, now let's dig into these start sits. The first guy I want to talk about at quarterback is Jay Cutler, who's playing the Saints in London. The Saints have now allowed the most 30-plus yard plays on deep throws this season. So that's 30-plus yard plays on throws that went 15 or more yards through the air. And they've also seen 7 deep ball tosses against them per game, which is the 8th most in the NFL. Meanwhile, Jay Cutler has thrown it deep on almost 25% of his passes over the first 2 games of the season, which is the 5th highest rate in the entire NFL this season. Now, last week, those throws obviously did not convert very well against the Jets, as Cutler was just 3 of 10 for 60 yards on those deep ball tosses. But he hypothetically should have an easier time this week, and in a game with a near 50-point total according to Vegas, he makes for a very, very intriguing streaming option. This is sort of like the Carson Palmer play last week. A lot of people were off him because of how he played the week before, but remember, each game is different, and bad games can happen for players. Another quarterback that I don't mind this week is Trevor Siemian, who's playing Oakland. Now, on this show, I mentioned that Trevor Siemian was a massive touchdown regression candidate after the first 2 weeks of the season, and he came out last week and he had a dud performance. I don't want to say that was completely predictable, but it was kind of predictable. It was eventually bound to happen. In an easier matchup this week, though, fantasy owners should look to him off the waiver wire. The only quarterback to do anything against the Raiders this year has been Kirk Cousins. So you might be a little hesitant to play Trevor Siemian as a result of that. But remember, they also played Josh McCown. According to NumberFire's schedule-adjusted metrics, the Raiders have the 3rd worst secondary in football. Don't worry, that secondary is not good. I will say this, though. One worry with Trevor Siemian this week is that he's done a lot of his work. He's gotten a lot of his production in the red zone this year. He's thrown 6 touchdowns in the red zone, which is the most in the NFL. And Oakland's only allowed 3 red zone touchdowns, and they've given up just 1 from within their own 10-yard line. I think he's a great play overall, but just be aware of that. A huge reason that Trevor Siemian was so good in weeks 1 and 2 is because he was throwing so many touchdowns close to the end zone. I also don't mind Andy Dalton against Cleveland. He showed some signs of life last week against Green Bay. And again, I like Carson Palmer against San Francisco. That's a very plus matchup for him. I think that he should be a very usable quarterback in fantasy football this week. On the sit side, I really don't like Kirk Cousins this week. Now, the only passer that has done something from a fantasy perspective against Kansas City this year has been Carson Wentz. And he did things that Kirk Cousins hasn't really done this year. In week 2, when Carson Wentz faced the Chiefs, He ran for 55 yards, and in that game, he threw it deep 12 times. So far this season, Kirk Cousins has 39 rushing yards, which is fewer than what Wentz had in that one game, and he's thrown the ball deep just 10 times. I think Kirk Cousins should be fine from here on out, but this is not an easy matchup for him on the road in Kansas City. Another road quarterback that I'm not feeling great about this week is Ben Roethlisberger. Over the last 4 years on the road against the Ravens, Big Ben has scored about 19 points, 4 points, 6 points, and another 19-point performance in fantasy football. That appears to be pretty boom or bust. Those are two 19-point performance games. But one of those performances was buoyed by a rushing touchdown. And we can certainly not count on Big Ben having a rushing touchdown in this game. And of course, now that I said that, he's going to score a rushing touchdown. Even though we saw a banged up Baltimore defense struggle a bit against the Jaguars in week 3, it's tough to really trust Ben Roethlisberger on the road against the secondary that is strong personnel-wise. Big Ben is averaging just 0.75 touchdown passes with a full interception against the Ravens over the last 4 games. I just don't know how you can trust him this week. I also don't know how you can trust Matthew Stafford in Minnesota. That Vikings defense has looked great. And Derek Carr at Denver. Denver's secondary is very strong. Don't love Carr this week. At running back, I don't mind Joe Mixon this week at Cleveland. Week 3 was kind of the week where we saw Joe Mixon becoming more of the lead back in that backfield. He played 56% of the team snaps. He saw 18 out of a possible 28 running back rushes. Things were looking good for Joe Mixon. And like I mentioned on the 15 Transactions show earlier this week, he's been the most impactful Cincinnati running back so far, having a success rate north of 37%. Both Jeremy Hill and Giovanni Bernard's success rates are below 27%. And success rate, just as a reminder, is the percentage of positive expected points runs made by a running back. The average in the NFL usually is around 40%. So Joe Mixon is slightly below average, but he's a lot better than his backfield teammates. Now with the Browns as the matchup, they actually haven't been all that bad against the run this year. They've only allowed one top 20 performance to a running back so far in PPR formats. And the Bengals are on the road. I think those two things make Joe Mixon a slightly less enticing play. But given his share in the backfield and the chance for a positive game script, I think that he should be started in most 12 or 14 team leagues. I also love Chris Carson this week. Carson also ended up with a 56% snap share in Seattle's week 3 loss to Tennessee, leading the Seahawks backfield in snaps played. And as I mentioned earlier in the week, that's huge news because he was not only on the field more than any other running back, but it was during a negative game script. That script will be flipped in week 4 with the Colts in town. Though the Colts have been pretty strong against running backs this year, they're actually allowing just a 24.2% success rate against the position, which is the 4th best in football. But volume should be there for Carson and the Seahawks because they are 13-point favorites. A game where Seattle should be in the lead is very, very good for Chris Carson. I also really like Tariq Cohen this week. I mentioned last week that I wasn't very high on Jordan Howard because of the negative game script aspect of things, and that's similar to this week. And the difference is that they're not at home. They're in Green Bay. When Chicago saw a big negative game script in week 2 against Tampa Bay, Tariq Cohen was on the field for 63% of the team's snaps. That's about 20% more than what we saw in week 3 against the Steelers in a neutral game script that went to overtime. The Bears are touchdown underdogs. The Bears are more than likely not going to win on Thursday night in Green Bay. And that should result in more playing time for Tariq Cohen to catch passes out of the backfield. He's a great play in PPR formats. I also don't really mind Wendell Smallwood this weekend in Los Angeles. I think that he's going to see the most touches in that backfield now that Darren Sproles is out of the picture. And some folks have been scared off of CJ Anderson, but as I mentioned in the 15 Transactions show, he still played a similar number of snaps that he saw in weeks 1 and 2. CJ Anderson this week should be absolutely fine. I think Jonathan Stewart is a pretty obvious sit this week at New England. You know, we saw our first glimpse of a true negative game script for the Panthers in week 3, and it resulted in a huge workload for Christian McCaffrey, not Jonathan Stewart. The snap split was pretty similar, but Christian McCaffrey saw 11 targets to Jonathan Stewart's 2, and Jonathan Stewart ran the ball 12 times after averaging 16.5 touches per game over the first 2 weeks of the season. The Panthers' offense has looked bad, you guys. It has not looked good. I have very little faith in that offense to perform even against a defense in New England that has looked pretty bad also this season. This might be different if the game were being played in Charlotte. But given that it's in New England, I don't have much faith in Jonathan Stewart this weekend. And I also don't like Amir Abdullah playing in Minnesota. I think the best way to describe the way that Amir Abdullah owners feel right now is that they're in running back purgatory. He's not really the goal line back in the offense because Dwayne Washington has more carries than he does within the opponent's 10-yard line, but he's also not the primary pass catcher. Theo Riddick is there. So as a result of that, even if he is the most talented running back in that backfield, and I do believe that he is, he's not getting enough love in the important parts of the field to be fantasy viable. And they're playing the Vikings defense in Minnesota that's allowed the fewest points to running backs to start this year. I don't know how you can start Amir Abdullah. I also don't like Frank Gore in what should be a negative game script in Seattle. And in shallower leagues, I do think that you can sit Isaiah Crowell. I really like DeAndre Hopkins this week. As my buddy Rich Rebar from RotoWorld mentioned on Twitter this week, the Titans are the only team in football that's allowed a top 12 performance to a wide receiver each week this season. And DeAndre Hopkins has historically dominated Tennessee. He has a near 40% target market share, which is the best in football. I think that he could go nuclear this week. So if you were on the fence with DeAndre Hopkins versus a viable option in a shallower league, I think you have to do your best to get him in your lineup. I'm also a pretty big fan of Adam Thielen this week. Now, the Lions defense looks different this year than it did last. The front seven looks better, the secondary looks better, the defense in sum looks a lot better than it did last year. And they've actually only allowed 220-plus yard receptions on throws that traveled 15 or more yards through the air this season. That ties them for the best in the NFL. And they faced a vertical offense in Arizona and also Matt Ryan. So it's not like their competition has been dreadful. That might be a big deal against this Minnesota offense that's just been chucking the ball down the field throughout the first part of the season. Sam Bradford and Case Keenum both rank in the top four in percentage of passes that have gone 15 or more yards through the air down the field. If Detroit can stop that, then the Vikings' overall ceiling may be capped in this game. With that being said, I fully expect Darius Slay, the Lions' stud corner, to shadow Stephon Diggs in this game. That will open up things dramatically for Adam Thielen. So even if the big plays aren't there, I think that Thielen should see a lot of love from Case Keenum this weekend. One player that I'm interested in this week who hasn't been producing to start the season is Jordan Matthews in Atlanta. He only has 11 targets this year. He has a 14% target market share in the Bills offense. He has not started the season off very hot. But I love his matchup this week. I think this could be the game where he gets things going. According to Pro Football Focus, 66% of his snaps have come from the slot this year. And he will move to that spot on the field anytime the Bills are in a three wide receiver set. Now, in 2017, in this season, the Bills have not run a lot of three wide receiver sets. They've run the fourth fewest in the entire NFL to start the season. But this is the first time that Buffalo could see a true negative game script this year, which means they could have more three wide receiver sets on the field, which means Jordan Matthews could be in the slot a lot against Atlanta. And that's a huge deal. Brian Poole is a very beatable corner in the slot against Atlanta. And slot wideouts against the Falcons over the last 2 weeks, Randall Cobb and Golden Tate, have combined to see 20 targets. Cobb was injured in that game against Atlanta and he still finished with 60 yards, while Golden Tate, as we know, was inches away from a multi-touchdown game. This is why Jordan Matthews is intriguing this week. It's certainly risky if you want to play him. He has not seen a lot of volume to start the season. And Charles Clay is a very, very good tight end play. And he can take a lot of those looks away in the middle of the field. But the matchup is certainly there. This could be the week that Jordan Matthews gets things going. I mentioned I like Jay Cutler. I also like Devontae Parker to maybe get some of those deep balls this week against New Orleans. I love DeSean Jackson opposite of Mike Evans against the New York Giants defense. That's a defense that you want to target number two wide receivers. In a very deep play, another defense that you love to target number two wideouts is against Arizona. That's Marquise Goodwin this week. You probably don't need to start Marquise Goodwin, but I do want to throw it out there if you're looking for a deep, deep, deep play. I don't think that you can play Amari Cooper very confidently this week. And I think that you could say the same thing for Michael Crabtree. Both wideouts are going to see tough matchups against Denver. And since the start of 2015, neither one of those guys is averaging more than 3.75 catches, 36.75 yards, and 0.25 touchdowns per game against the Broncos. Now, it's true that Dez Bryant and Keenan Allen have already been useful in fantasy football against Denver this season, but it took a combined 26 targets for the two of them to rank 11th and 17th in weekly PPR scoring. 26 combined targets. I don't think that we should assume that kind of volume is going to be there for either one of these Raiders wide receivers. I would stay away from this passing offense, maybe aside from Jared Cook this week. And I also don't think that you should play Terrell Pryor. I actually don't mind his matchup because I think he's going to avoid Marcus Peters in this matchup for the majority of it. But I'm not very high on Kirk Cousins, as I already talked about, and Terrell Pryor only has 10 catches for 116 yards this year. And he's not getting those deep balls. He only has 4 deep ball targets this season. That's hugely important for fantasy production. Is the matchup there on paper? I would say kind of, yes. But it's not a situation like Jordan Matthews where the matchup is so amazing despite the wide receiver having not performed this year. I think Terrell Pryor is more of a wide receiver 3 or low-end wide receiver 3 this week, and if you're in a 10-team league, he should probably be on your bench. Other wide receivers I'm not that into, Martavis Bryant is one against Baltimore, and Michael Crabtree, I already mentioned, I don't think you can play him either. At tight end, I mentioned him in the 15 transactions column this week, but I do like Cameron Brait against the Giants. Starting tight ends against the Giants have ranked 3rd, 7th, and 3rd in weekly PPR scoring to start the season. As I mentioned earlier in the week, Brait has been on the field for fewer snaps than teammate OJ Howard, but he's ran 11 more routes than OJ Howard has, and he's seen 3 more targets as a result of that. So he is the pass-catching tight end for the Buccaneers, which is what we thought coming into the season. And being the pass-catching tight end for the Buccaneers in this matchup is a beautiful thing. Cameron Brait is a great streamer. Another streamer that I really like is Jesse James. Baltimore also hasn't had much success against tight ends this season. In week 1, Cincinnati tight ends didn't do a thing against them, but let's be honest, Cincinnati anything didn't do anything against Baltimore in week 1. And the Browns duo in week 2 caught 5 passes on 8 targets for 88 yards and a score. And then, of course, Mercedes Lewis went nuclear against them in London. Then you have Jesse James, who has 17 targets and a pair of scores this season. He has 12 catches, and he's been on the field for 86% of Pittsburgh snaps. That's the 6th highest snap rate among all tight ends in the NFL this season. Baltimore has capable players on the outside to lock things down, or at least moderately lock things down. We know that Antonio Brown can't be locked down. But that should open things up for Jesse James a bit. I like him a lot in this matchup. Other tight ends that I would play this week, I mentioned it before, I think Jared Cook is pretty intriguing because it's a funnel defense that funnels those looks to the middle of the field with those great corners shutting things down on the outside against Denver. And I would play Vernon Davis if Jordan Reed sits again. Vernon Davis is basically a fringe top 10 tight end anytime Jordan Reed does not play. The number one tight end sit this week is Eric Ebron, and it pains me to say it because you guys know that I love me some Eric Ebron. You know, there are some positives surrounding Eric Ebron. He ranks in the top 10 in routes run this season among the tight end position, but he's only come through with 1 top 30 performance in PPR formats in the first 3 games of the season. The Vikings might not look too bad from a fantasy points against standpoint, but the 2 touchdowns that they allowed to tight ends came in garbage time. Kobe Fleener in week 1, Cameron Brait last week. The matchup on paper is not very easy for Eric Ebron. He should be on the bench. Other guys that should be on the bench, Austin Hooper against Buffalo. The matchup really isn't that bad, but Austin Hooper's just not seeing enough looks. And then Jack Doyle against Seattle. I would just avoid the Indianapolis offense this week. On defense, I think the obvious start this week is the Cincinnati Bengals, who are playing in Cleveland. DeShone Kizer is taking more than 3 seconds per throw according to NFL.com's Next Gen Stats. That's the 2nd longest time in the league. He's always looking to get the ball downfield. He's thrown more deep ball passes than any other quarterback in the NFL to start the season, not named Tom Brady. When a quarterback holds onto the ball, it doesn't matter what the offensive line looks like. It doesn't matter how good that offensive line is. It's going to generate sacks. Cleveland's now allowed the 4th most sacks in the league this year, while Cincinnati ranks tied for 5th. Cleveland's allowed the 4th most sacks despite them having a mobile quarterback behind the line of scrimmage for them. This is a great matchup for Cincinnati's strong defensive line. I also love the Jags against the Jets. Anytime that you can stream a defense against Josh McCown, you're going to have a high floor. And on Thursday night, I think that you can play Green Bay against Chicago. On the sit side, I think that you can sit the Houston Texans against Tennessee. Now, Houston's at home in a game with a low over-under, so it might look like targeting them is not a bad idea. But I hate targeting the Titans from a defensive standpoint. They're a run-first team, and Marcus Mariota is good at limiting turnovers. He's good at limiting mistakes. And the Titans' offensive line is really good. They've only allowed 2 sacks this year. And they face Seattle and Jacksonville. Seattle didn't even sack Marcus Mariota, and Jacksonville only had 1 sack against him. And the Jags lead the league in sacks through 3 weeks. The Titans' offensive line is real. They are a run-first team. It's not a good matchup for an opposing defense. I'm also not feeling great about the Panthers going to New England. I don't think anyone should. And I don't love the Chargers against Philadelphia this week either. That'll do it for today's show, though, guys. Thanks again for tuning in. If you've yet to subscribe to the Late Round Podcast, please do so by going to iTunes, TuneIn, SoundCloud, Google Play, and Stitcher. And as I keep mentioning over and over again, if you leave a rating and review on iTunes, you'll be automatically entered for a chance to win a NumberFire premium subscription for a year. I'll be drawing a name very soon, next week, so get on that. You could also follow me on Twitter, @LateRoundQB, and if you have any questions for the mailbag show that'll drop tomorrow, you can send them to Twitter or email me at jj@numberfire.com. Thanks, guys. I'll talk to you tomorrow.